Now you get to watch your voice go up and down. But I can fix things even if
up I go, oh, and that's down, too loud. Up and down. Up and down. Sorry.
That's just Betty checking the levels and watching how when you talk, little things appear and make it all...
I'm easily entertained.
Yeah, that's good. We are joined by Betty Chow today. Hi, Betty.
Hello.
This is episode 51 of the Chattering Classes, and we're recording in what appears to be a bunker. Right?
That's a fair description, yeah.
We're in a school, but we found a little space to hide to do this after class hours, professional core hours as well. Thank you. So we're having a chat with Betty. Tell me, Betty, what's happening?
Well, this thing called Christmas is happening. That's coming up next week, I believe. And then after...
Do you like Christmas?
Yeah. I think so. Like, you know, I like the values that it emphasizes, like, you know, family and giving.
Yeah.
Food, definitely, yeah. The food part.
Does the receiving annoy you?
The receiving?
Yeah.
Do
you get more stressed receiving presents than giving them?
No.
No?
No. I like to be pleasantly surprised with what type of chocolate I'm going to get. From my parents.
We did just have a discussion of how much we, or you especially, don't like a Christmas hamper filled with shortbread. Everyone loves shortbread and fruitcake.
Presents with some thought and personalization can go a long way.
Yeah. But people don't, like, if you've got to buy it for your whole faculty or whatever, that's, isn't that asking too much?
It's very tokenistic. I'm more of a, like, feel like you just have to, then maybe don't. Right. Save some money and save some time.
Yeah, a donation has been made in your honour. That's always a good one. The Human Fund.
No, I'm all about giving.
You're all about giving.
Yes.
That's good. Now, I wanted to talk to you for a number of reasons. Number one was I thought we were the same age.
Yeah, because clearly... I look...
Yeah. Do you look 40? 40. Is that right? Yes. No, I thought we were the same age because we had the exact same musical references.
Yes.
It seemed. And by that, I mean we both know all the words to New Kids on the Block, step by step, with actions.
Yeah, I thought that just transcends all age groups.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem to be out there too much, so... This is the reason I'm interviewing is because that came up. I was like, are you the same age as me? You seem to know all the words to all the songs that I learned all the words to in like year 5 or year 6 because it was important to know all the words to Bust a Move or I don't know what the other ones would have been.
I Love Your Smile.
I Love Your Smile. all of the New Kids on the Block back catalogue.
Yes.
Betty Boo is doing the do. I don't know if you know that one.
I do. I've got the music video on VHS at home.
Tell me more about that. What, well, like taped off Rage? Is that what we're talking about?
At the end of every year, they do the top 100 and my sisters and I would tape it every year.
So this is exactly why I thought, all right, this is when it's important to learn all the words to specific songs.
Yeah, it was particularly important for me because that's how, as I told you earlier, that's how I learned the English language, through song.
Okay, much. And was the bit that I was like, what? Mm. What are you talking about? Because where were you born?
I was born in Hong Kong.
Okay.
But I moved to Australia when I was 5.
Right.
So in 1989.
Yeah.
So I didn't know a word of English at that point. And I had to immerse myself in, I guess, pop culture, TV, music to get the hang of it.
Right.
Of the English language.
And when you moved to Australia, you moved to a big city?
No. I moved from Hong Kong to Cootamundra, which is about an hour away from Wagga Wagga.
Mm-hmm. What's the do you know the population?
Yeah, about 6,000.
So a town of 6,000 people. Why on earth did you move from Hong Kong to Cootamundra?
So my uncles were already established there with their Chinese restaurant business.
Okay.
So
is it still there?
It's one of them is.
Okay.
So I've got three uncles on my dad's side.
Yeah.
And they all worked in across two different Chinese restaurants in town. And then that ended up turning into three restaurants.
Right.
And so now three down Chinese to two.
Restaurants in a town of 6,000 people.
They really like
in the
their Chinese
late 80s, early 90s.
Takeaway.
Right.
Yeah, especially when the takeaway includes fish and chips and T-bone steaks.
So, but is it, was every restaurant the same?
Yeah.
The same menu, 6,000 people. Three restaurants.
Maybe just the different environment.
Maybe. That's or which Chinese restaurant will we go to? I don't like that one. I don't like the other place does it this dish
one
better.
One was set in the country club.
Okay, yeah.
On the golf course. The other one was a restaurant in its own.
Right. Very familiar country town, golf course, Chinese.
Yeah.
Has to be attached.
Yeah. But that's gone now. So all that remains now, like what? 30 years later is two standalone restaurants.
Right, because this is at a time too, I don't know personally, but I'd say there was quite the boom in Chinese restaurant. That was the adventurous thing to eat, the exotic thing to eat.
Yes.
In my family, if it was someone's birthday or if Dad won money on the racehorses or something like that.
How can a sauce be sweet and sour?
And sour. How good is Mongolian lamb with extra chili?
Exactly. Yeah.
And watching my dad sweat through a meal and being like, wow, what is this crazy food that makes you sweat? And let's fry things and then cover them in honey. That's just genius. And then fry them again.
And ice cream? Deep fried?
Deep fried.
It's like magic.
Yeah, how did they do that?
Defies science.
It defies science. So, but that is the case. That was the case in the 80s in Australia. Was like, whoa, Chinese. It's all the rage.
Yeah, this must be multiculturalism.
This is multiculturalism. It's working. I'm a big believer Australia. It's probably the similar cases all around the world. But I think Australia accepts other countries based on their food.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we don't like these people. Oh, Vietnamese food's pretty good. Oh, we don't like it. Oh, Turkish foods. Have you had it? Oh,
Kuta hasn't.
It hasn't
extended to
still got Chinese,
Vietnamese, or Turkish that I'm also.
So why? What made your uncles come to Australia?
They originally, I think they had an opportunity to set up shop in Orange to begin with, and then they did a road trip around New South Wales, and they found a bit of a market in Cootamundra.
Right.
There wasn't a restaurant there. And so they liked the area and so they set up shop.
Moved on in. And then you guys came over as well.
Yep. Yep. So my parents with my two older sisters and myself.
Right. Okay. Now here's the best story about you. What is your Chinese name?
So in Cantonese, it's Zhou Bikyi.
Okay.
Yeah, but in an English translation, it's Pik Yi Chow.
Pik Yi Chow.
Yes.
Okay, and when you moved, was it when you moved to Australia, you chose anglicised names or before you left?
Just before we left, my mother asked my sisters and I what Anglo name we would like to be used when we moved. And my second elder sister.
Yeah.
She wanted the name Betty.
Right. Okay, let's just stop for a moment there because your name is Betty.
Correct.
How does that happen?
Well, because as the youngest child, I got to pretty much get whatever I wanted. And what I used to always want was whatever my sister wanted.
Yeah, wow.
Because I admired her growing up and... And so when she said she wanted the name Betty, I was like, no, I want Betty. And the five-year-old won.
So did you have a tantrum or did they just go, all right, whatever?
I don't remember the reactions as such, just that I won.
Just that you won, right.
And so my sister ended up getting the consolation name, which is Becky.
So did she just go, all right, you can have Betty, but I'll be Becky?
Yeah.
Right.
Pretty much. And then the eldest one's Alice.
Right.
Yeah.
So does that come up? Does your sister still... Was there any lingering, my name's Betty, you know, not yours. I chose Betty. You didn't choose Betty.
No, I think we kind of got used to it and made it our own.
Wow.
Regrettably.
So you're the youngest of three.
I am. Yeah. There's a bit of an age gap between my sisters and I, 8 and 7 years. Right. Hence, I guess the music references, whatever they were into, was true. Whatever I was into. So you're Whitney Houston and... Your New Kids on the Block, and we had the New Kids Bubblegum, and they would buy Smash Hits and
good old Smash Hits.
TV hits, and that we'd cut out the song lyrics from those magazines every month and put them in alphabetical order. That helps with the English, you know.
Okay.
and just learn the words and sing along to the radio.
So when you move, the whole family moves over. How, it's going to be culture shock. Do you remember culture shock? Of coming from Hong Kong, not just to another city, but to a very rural, small town in Australia.
Yeah, well, it was something my mother always dreamed of as well. So we have this money box, I guess, and it's in the shape of a house.
Okay.
And it still sits in my parents' house now in Cootamundra. They're still there. And Mum always likes to tell me the story about how when she married Dad, you know, she showed him the money box and said, I want a house like that one day.
Right.
And so when we moved to Australia and we got our house, Mum was ecstatic. She's like, land. And because, you know, the whole change from high-rise buildings, we lived on the 18th floor of this apartment building with 2 bedrooms for the 5 of us. And I had to sleep with Mum and Dad, and my sister was in the room in bunk beds. And I remember all the graffiti and the metal gates with behind the big door with 3-4 different locks, and you know, right. Security was there.
Yeah, okay.
to a town where no one locks their doors. There's space to run and move, everyone says hello and waves there was that big culture shock there, and not necessarily just for us, but also I think for the residents of the town.
I was going to say, did your family, I don't know how much you'd remember, but did your family encounter a lot of hostility or?
I don't know about, I can't speak for my parents, but we were definitely like the token Asians in town.
Right.
And
were you exotic? Did people ask you like questions about?
I remember when I was in year 5. I was standing in the canteen line and someone tapped me on the shoulder and asked me if I was Aboriginal. And the reason that they asked that was because I had black hair. Yeah, so even...
Not even black hair in the in the school.
Yeah, I definitely remember in kindergarten, the person who was supposed to show me around the school, the one who was assigned my buddy, would run away from me whenever I tried to approach her. So that kind of, you know, you don't need to learn English to know what's going on there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always got the go back to where you come from. I remember in year 3 or 4, we were doing sport and it was at the tennis courts. And I got to a tennis court to play, and that happened to be a tennis court that some year 6 kid wanted.
Right.
And so his attempt to intimidate me off the court was to throw the racial slurs and things at me. Nothing was ever physically thrown at me or anything like that. It was very much all verbal. In high school, there was a case where a girl in my commerce class in year 9 said quite loud in class, oh, don't go to this restaurant, which happens to be my parents, to another student. Oh, don't go to that restaurant. They eat cats and dogs there.
Yeah, go to the other Chinese restaurant in town. It's much better.
Yeah, and so my commerce teacher, who obviously knew that that restaurant was my parents, pulled that girl out of class and just outside the door. yelled at her, didn't you know that that's, you know, right. Betty's rah-rah-rah. And so that was very uncomfortable because the class was still going on.
I was
going
to say, is that worse? What was the worst moment?
She meant well. I just wanted to crawl into a ball, really. Yeah.
Year 9 especially. What? I'm happy to accept racism, but just don't draw attention to me, please, in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I mean, the student ended up writing me a note in class afterwards apologising.
Oh, wow.
So that was nice, I suppose.
How, when you're young and you're in that situation, how do your parents explain that to you?
They didn't. It's not really a thing. I don't know if it's a cultural thing, but my parents weren't really home much because of the restaurant, the hours that they worked. It was more so my sisters who kind of cared for me most of the time. So I worked out quite easily that I would spend more time with my teachers at school than I did with my parents growing up.
Right.
Because as soon as I wake up, you know, I get to school, come home 3:30, and then my parents are out again at 4:30, 5 o'clock to go to the restaurant, and then they come home at about 9 o'clock,
right, wow.
Feed us dinner, and then we go to bed. So we never had, like, family holidays or anything like that, let alone conversations about, so, the birds and the bees, or, so,
yeah.
Racism. You might notice that you look a little different from other children here.
This might explain a lot about you. Just put your head down and just keep going.
Yeah, it was a bit like that. And I know my sisters were copying it, obviously, as well. And I'm probably the more social out of the three. So their response was often, go to the library.
Okay.
That was their safe spot.
Yeah.
Whereas I found kind of other misfits to be friends with.
It's so important when you're young.
Yeah.
To find other misfits. whatever you're like, if you find people like you.
Exactly.
So very important.
Mm.
Okay, so growing up in Cootamundra, was it, do you have a lot of nostalgia for it? Or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And like, we still go back every Christmas.
Your parents are still there.
My parents are still there, and I ended up marrying a boy from Cootamundra as well.
Yeah.
So his parents are still there.
Did you go through school with him?
I met him in year 7.
Right.
So we've known each other since year 7. He went to a different primary school, but him and his family were regulars at my parents' restaurant since he was little. So my parents have known him for a lot longer than I have. So it's just easier to go back every Christmas and during the school holidays.
So his family's still there?
Yep.
So nice. So when did you get together? If you're in year 7, the same age, like in the same time?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the same age. I'm 3 months older, so he likes to call me the cougar. We got together officially when we were in year 11.
Right.
At our friend Alicia's farm.
Right.
So we've been together for 18 years.
Right.
Now.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you manage, like, university? So you went to,
I didn't tell my parents that we were together for quite a number of years.
How many years is a number?
Because my parents were very like, you know, no boyfriends until after uni.
Okay.
Study
is important.
Yeah, study, work, focus, and definitely not, you know, a non-Chinese boy. And, and so I knew what was going to happen.
It's fairly limiting in Cootamundra.
I think that was the strategic.
Yeah.
So I went to uni in Sydney and Michael moved to Canberra.
Okay.
And we did that long distance for 5 years.
So what did that involve, like, logistically?
So I'd probably come down to Canberra once a month and he might come up to Sydney every now and then, but...
For 5 years?
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah. But we talk a lot on the phone or... We're pretty independent and we had our own group of friends anyway, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely takes two, and you need to be committed to the long game.
Right.
So we did that for 5 years, and then I moved to Cooma for my first teaching placement after uni.
Was that, I was going to say strategic, but was that like, did that you was nominate half the time. An area?
Yeah, well, yeah, that was one of the areas that I ticked off. I told the New South Wales Education Department that I was willing to go anywhere near like Queanbeyan, Cooma, oh, Queanbeyan area. I think that the whole covers that whole part.
Yeah.
And Sydney as well. And I got a call back for the Cooma job 10 days before the start of the school.
Very familiar story, yes.
Yeah. So I had 10 days to move from Sydney to Cooma, not knowing anyone in Cooma.
And Cooma's south of Canberra, so you've got to go to Canberra and then a further hour.
Yeah.
South, all right.
Yep, and find accommodation.
All in 10 days and then start being a teacher.
Yep, for the first time ever.
Was that at a high school?
Yes.
Yep. And what were you teaching?
English.
Right, so you're teaching English. You got 10 days preparation, first job.
Yep.
Go to it. Now, are you a person who believes in fate? Like, did you think, I'm being moved closer to Michael?
I didn't think of it as fate. It was like, where is it exactly? Yeah, and they said, an hour away from Canberra, an hour away from the snow, and an hour away from the beach. Apparently, I found out later that's their stock standard selling.
That's not true, is it?
No, it isn't, but I believe them.
It's about an hour from Canberra, but it's might be an hour from the snow, but it's certainly not an hour from the beach.
I don't know what beach they're thinking
not
of.
Not a nice beach.
Maybe a lake.
Lake
Jindabyne.
Sand. There's sand, there's water. What more do you want?
Marimbula, I don't know.
You're from Cootamundra. Just be happy.
So, yeah, it was a lot closer to Canberra, so I took that. And so Michael and I did another 3 years of Cooma, Canberra.
Okay.
And then I married him. So I thought, maybe it's time after 8 years should live in the same state or territory again.
Right.
And so we got married and moved.
When did you break the news to your parents? Like at graduation?
I never had a conversation with them to say, Mom, Dad,
it seems
I have
a
boyfriend
like this is
and it's Michael.
This seems like a standard between you and your parents, isn't
that
it?
That we don't communicate.
don't have to communicate.
Oh, we communicate. It's more of them communicating to me about what I need to do.
Okay.
So it's more of a, make sure you're eating right, make sure you're washing your clothes, make sure you're adulting in various forms. Don't forget to do this, don't forget to do that. Did I mention don't forget to do that? Yes, you have. Two don't forget to go.
So they do that with each of your sisters, I'd imagine?
Yeah, well, they were few. Well, my sisters did have that conversation with Mum and Dad when they got their first boyfriends at university. And I saw what their reactions were at home.
Okay, unpleasant.
They were not pleased at all. And those were boys of, like, one was Malaysian and the other one was from Hong Kong. So that was not even crossing any cultural boundaries there. And they were very unhappy, let alone, so it wasn't until my Becky.
Yes.
She ended up marrying a Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
And at their wedding, Michael was invited. My sisters knew.
Right.
So my sisters knew that I was seeing Michael since year 12-ish.
Okay.
And he just basically started popping around at events.
Just so happened to be here, yeah.
Yep, and so my parents kind of just, I guess, assumed.
Right, so how did he go keeping that to himself? Did his family know?
His family knew. His family knew that my parents didn't really know.
So, but they're all in the same town.
They are.
Still going to the restaurant,
I would imagine. It seems like a really, really great story arc for Home and Away, your neighbours, right?
So the parents know they're going to eat at the restaurant. Oh, there's Michael. When are you getting yourself a girlfriend? Oh.
Yeah.
All of that stuff would be going on there. His parents would be like, oh, what we keep saying? I don't know.
Well, they don't socialise much. Right. My parents basically just work, go home, work, go home, go to Woolies, buy stuff for work, and go home. Yeah. So they don't really cross paths much, even with the restaurant. Michael's parents aren't really regulars anymore. So I guess they got sick of Chinese food. I don't know.
After 30 years of eating Chinese food. Okay, now the other thing I want to, getting back to your parents, is when I asked you to sit down and do this podcast, you were like, oh, okay, yep, sure, story's not interesting. My parents, on the other hand, you said this exact sentence. My mum was like a famous opera singer, like really famous, like people asked her for autographs. And my dad, you know, met lots of people like Muhammad Ali. So what? And then you left. It was literally as you were leaving my house that you were like, oh, yeah, by the way.
Fun fact.
Fun facts about my family. What? Like your mum was... A famous opera singer.
Yeah, I don't think she won like awards. I don't know if there were awards for opera singers, like Cantonese, Chinese opera singers. But she did have fans giving her presents after shows, and she did have autographs, like black and white photos of her doing poses and autographing them for fans. And so, and she did have tapes made up of her shows, which she's got plenty of copies of. And she was often the lead female in those productions, so it'll be her on the cover. So I don't know to what level of success, but enough for me to remember her.
Right, so she was performing when you were...
Yeah, so she was performing pretty much all the way up to us moving to Cootamundra. So she gave up her career there. But the little
house money box was the dream. She's a however famous she is, she's a successful opera singer. Yeah. The little house, that's what drew her.
Yeah, away. Well, so mum grew up in mainland China, and her parents left her in their little village to move to Hong Kong. And took her little brother with them because they couldn't, for whatever reason, I'm not sure, like maybe financial, they couldn't afford or for whatever reason can't take her with them to Hong Kong. So she stayed with family friends and extended family in their little mainland village until she was in her early teens. Meanwhile, on another part of mainland China in Hainan, my dad was also left behind by his parents, who took all of his other siblings. So he's one of five.
He's one of five.
He's one of five, and they took four with them to Hong Kong.
Right.
So they had this parallel story of them being raised by... their family friends and extended family in the middle of nowhere.
How do you make a decision like that? You've got five children, you're going to take four.
Yeah, well, apparently my grandfather on my mum's side went to Hong Kong first by himself to suss out what opportunities are there, and then was like, okay, come on over. So my grandma and took the younger brother. And then both when they were in their early teens, had to travel by themselves to Hong Kong to be reunited with
a family they hadn't grown up with.
And by the time my mum went to Hong Kong, her parents had another kid.
Wow. So
that's when she first met her younger brother.
Did she know all about this? Was there like
communication between them? And they ended up being next door neighbours in this apartment building.
Wow.
In Aberdeen, in Hong Kong. And my grandfather on my mum's side was very into the Chinese opera scene.
Okay.
And my grandfather on my dad's side worked on ships or cruises or something. And so my dad would travel the world with my granddad, I'm not sure if he was on the ships with. But he got into that area anyway. Right. So he would travel around the world on his ship doing deckhand stuff, I guess. I don't know. And mum would be doing her Chinese opera training stuff and then working her way up into the Chinese opera thing. They both left school before like early.
Yeah.
And my my grandparents on my mum's side would always notice how whenever dad was home, they could see like through their windows that he'd be helping out with the cleaning and the cooking and the washing up and stuff. And they thought, oh, you know, he's
that's a type of boy.
He's a good boy. So my both sets of grandparents were kind of talking about.
This is getting more less like Home and Away and more like, I don't know.
Yeah, so that's...
We're talking a feature film right here.
So my dad would write letters to Mum when he was on his cruise ship, and Mum would send him photos of her Chinese opera poses and whatnot. And then Dad decided to, you know, stay in Hong Kong and get a job that is based in Hong Kong. So he ended up getting a job at the Peninsula Hotel in Hong Kong, which is the, like, most fancy, schmancy hotel. And that's where he crossed paths with the likes of Liz Taylor and Muhammad Ali. And he was telling me that one night he was, you know, picking up the bed linen or whatever from the hotel rooms, and Muhammad Ali was there and showing him a card trick. And
really? That's so great.
Yeah. So Dad, I'm sure, has a lot of stories to tell. Mum and Dad just decided to leave Hong Kong, where, as I said, the space that we were living in was really tiny, and they knew that there were much better opportunities, I think, for my sisters and I in Australia, that education would be better, that that we'd have a much better chance anyway at life in Australia. So they gave all of that up. So Mum probably would have been about 40 or so now, so picking up everything, and and their English is not very good at all either. So as I'm approaching their age, I'm thinking, wow.
Yeah, how did you...
How do you just...
Yeah, with all the kids and hope for the best, really.
Yeah. It's like,
all right, we're going to give them the best opportunity. Let's go. So have you heard recordings?
Yes, yeah, so of my mum.
Of your mum, yeah.
Yeah, and I've got lots of photos. I want to start archiving them. And, and we used to, Mum had this tape recorder that she would sing in, and then sometimes she'll get my sisters and I to record us singing.
Right.
So recording our singing has been something that we've done for years. And
you get those harmonies nice. Right for...
Well, we did do a recording of Step by Step.
That's right, yes.
With the...
And knowing each role?
Yep.
How did you split the three roles into the five?
Well, I was always Joe.
Okay.
Alice was probably always Jordan.
Yeah.
And let's face it, Danny never sang.
There weren't many. There was some talking that some of them did, right?
Yeah, so... Yeah, it was fun. But the tapes we still have at home as well. We just need to have a cassette player to be able to dig that up. But we were starting to record them on CDs as well.
How? I would love to drop in a little clip here of you and your sister singing Step by Step. Play from an audio tape. That would be amazing. Wow.
Mm.
All right. Well, we might, we're going to finish up fairly soon.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you a question of... Why are you so positive? Because maybe this is just surface...
It feels judgy.
This is maybe surface observation. You know, I've worked with you 2 years, but, you know, sometimes you don't really know the people you work with that well. But you seem to me and strike me as a fairly positive person.
Oh, thank you.
Like, where do you get the energy... Because you seem to have... Are you a person that, when you're at work, is up and energetic, and then do you go home and crash, or do you...
Oh, I think I definitely go home and crash a fair bit. I'm definitely a morning person.
Okay, yeah.
I guess I, it sounds really odd, but I've come across a lot of different people with their different hardships and issues, and I read, you know, what's going on in the world, and there's a lot of great tragedy and sadness, but I also see that there is a light as well all the time, and I guess I want to make sure that other people, in whatever way I can, that there is always that light.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that, like, laughter is infectious and contagious, that positive energy and zest can be as well. I don't think I deliberately
that's what I mean.
Maybe I had, and then it's just faked it till you made it.
Right.
Now right. It's in a part of me. I'm not sure. But I used humor, I guess, a lot growing up as a way to deal with the racism or mm-hmm. not having friends. Well, I did have friends eventually, but
fairly isolating upbringing, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and with the misfits. I mean, in high school, our group was called the Freaks. Our group of misfits. There were different, and was all agreed on by the year group as well. So they were the snobs.
Did you like being one of the freaks?
I did. Yeah. We each had our own symbol. I was the star.
Sorry, let's go back there. Okay.
Yeah. So I remember in the group, we made up our own like symbol. It was very high school like. So Alicia, for example, my friend was a love heart. Okay. That was her symbol. And my friend Megan was a smiley face. And I was a star because I really loved stars.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and another friend was dollar sign because he was very superficial and liked money. Another one would be a football because he liked sports. And we were just, you know, we were different, but we had something in common, which I guess was our sense of humour and our ability to help each other.
The freaks tend to find each other.
Yeah, and we're still in good contact and still friends.
Yeah.
So I guess using humour and how that kind of... I use that a lot to try and... to make up for the badness of situations. Right. Now,
when you talked about light before, like, do the people who are facing hardships, and you work with a lot of students, we work with students who are facing a lot of hardships, who don't have that light in their life. It's a lot of chaos, and it's always discombobulated for them. Maybe I'm confusing the question here, but do you, for want of a better phrase, shine your light on them as a way to perhaps draw it out of them?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Kind of be the light.
Yes, be the light. Yeah.
In a way, yeah, because I remember feedback from, well, I shouldn't call it feedback, it sounds very formal, but I have remembered in the past students had commented on, oh, you're always so smiley and cheerful, and that makes me feel so happy, and it's always nice to come into your classroom, and it's, you know, and you're so, you know, happy. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And so I want to be able to give that to them if they're not getting it themselves, in a way, as a way to kind of hopefully help them forget, even for an hour, that they don't necessarily need to talk about what's going on.
Yeah.
But they can
feel good.
Feel good.
Yep. I think that's a pretty, that's a nice, noble idea. All right. Well, that'll do us, I think, today. I reckon I could talk to you for another few hours, and maybe we will in the future.
Sure.
But thank you very much. I wanted to end by just letting everyone know that our mutual friend Sarah calls you the most fun, so sober person she's ever met.
Yes. Which
says a lot about Sarah and
sober
myself.
Because not because I had an alcohol problem.
No, not like, yeah, not a recovering alcoholic. No. Just someone who doesn't drink.
Yes, I'm allergic.
Yeah. Mm. Allergic to that. You're allergic to so many things.
Mm.
But anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's it.
Lots of fun.